The US and Afghanistan are at loggerheads over a stalled security agreement that President Hamid Karzai has refused to sign despite increasing US pressure. The deal would allow between 12,000 to 14,000 troops, mostly American, to stay in Afghanistan beyond 2014. Under the pact, American forces would be able to enter Afghan homes as part of their operations and enjoy legal immunity, two of the most important sticking points. President Karzai suggests he's being bullied into signing an unfair pact. Is Afghanistan best with or without this deal? What would a permanent US stay in the country mean? You're watching The Debate.
Afghanistan, a country lying in destruction caused by a war. In the wake of the 9/11 attacks in 2001, the United States invaded the country under the pretext of toppling the Taliban regime. The longest war in America's history has left a large number of casualties. Now, after more than a decade, Washington insists to continue its military presence in the country. However, it's facing an obstacle. Refusal by Afghan President Hamid Karzai to sign a security pact called the Bilateral Security Agreement, or the BSA. President Karzai is under mounting pressure from the US to sign the deal, but he has set some preconditions for putting a final seal of approval on the deal. Major sticking points are a quick end to US airstrikes and night raid on Afghan homes, which have already killed many civilians, and the legal immunity granted to the US troops who will remain in the war-torn country beyond 2014. Under the deal, US-led troops will not face Afghan courts if they commit any crime on Afghanistan's soil. Karzai says if he doesn't get what he wants, he'll leave it to his successor to decide about the fate of the BSA after the April presidential election. In November 28, a US drone attack killed a child and wounded two women in southern Afghanistan. Karzai condemned the attack, saying,
"American forces do not respect the safety of the Afghan people in their homes. For years, our people have been killed and their homes destroyed under the pretext of a war on terror."
Washington doesn't seem happy with Karzai's conditions. Afghan officials say the US has even stopped several projects in the country to put more pressure on Karzai to sign the deal. The US has repeatedly said it will not wait until after the April vote to seal the deal that allows between 12,000 to 14,000 troops, mostly American, to remain in Afghanistan beyond 2014. As Washington and Kabul remain at loggerheads over their stalled security agreement, the impasse is raising questions about whether any US and NATO troops will remain after the end of next year in Afghanistan. Time will tell if Karzai will stick to his position or will he give in to US pressure.
You're watching The Debate. Joining us now live from Washington is historian, journalist and lecturer Mr. Webster Griffin Tarpley, and with us live from San Francisco, former Afghan diplomat Mr. Khushhal Ar-Salah. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. I'll put my first question to our guest in San Francisco, Mr. Ar-Salah. Why do you think President Karzai is not signing this agreement, although the lawyer Jirga approved it?
The reasons which were put by the president during the Jirga, at the end of the Jirga, and afterwards by his spokesmen and others, and also the short commentary by your associate mentioned the sticking points, which is the home raids, and then also, later on, the president puts a few other conditions, which is peace and fair elections. So there are those points or those issues which have also created a lot of tension between Washington and Kabul, and especially between president and Washington. And that's why he openly stated in his remarks during the Jirga that we do not trust, both sides do not trust each other. Neither I trust them, nor they trust me.
So you referred there to the issue of elections, Mr. Arsalan. Does this mean that there is no trust in the U.S. and they believe that the United States is going to interfere in the process of elections, which is something that's domestically totally to do with Afghanistan?
That's one of the two other issues which the president later on put those conditions. One is that his last election where president have some problems where the Afghan government have thought that, you know, there were certain elements and others, even within the United Nations, Peter Galbraith's role and favoring other candidates compared to president, and then those issues. So there might be, you know, some fears from the president's side that there will be intervention from different sides in the elections, which would not bring good results.
Well, let's go to, I guess, Mr. Tarpley now in Washington and ask him the question about the sticking points we just discussed. Now, Mr. Tarpley, first we've got the issue of concern about intervention by the U.S., and then we've got the issue of immunity. The U.S. seems to be insisting on these points. It's not going to give up its legal immunity. It's not going to stop its nighttime raids. Why do you think it's so important for the U.S. to keep these points?
Well, let me say first of all that there really are no good options, certainly no ideal options for Afghanistan after 30 years of warfare and destruction, which have proved futile for all concerned. We can only think about lesser evils in the particular province that we're talking about. Obviously, it's easy to see that Karzai has a great deal of right on his side. American troops are still in Germany and Japan, but they don't barge into people's homes. That is unheard of. So certainly that's a very acceptable point. The excesses with drones, I think, are before the eyes of the world. Those should be stopped. The question of the immunity of the troops is perhaps a little bit more complicated, but isn't it really the case that what we're getting to is the idea that the United States is not a good fit as a military backup for somebody like Karzai? Obviously, the U.S. administration has been hostile to him. Going back to WikiLeaks, they made sure that he was hit with slanderous and other, you know, exposés that aimed at weakening him, and indeed the role of Galbraith and so forth. So. Wouldn't it be more reasonable to think about regional forces? Isn't there anybody in the region or a number of countries who could put together some kind of a peacekeeping force that could be of assistance to the Afghan forces, yes, but at the same time not pose this question of imperialist meddling?
Well, Ms. Arsala, right now we're seeing a lot of visits being made to Afghanistan. We had earlier Susan Rice, we have Chuck Hagel, who visited Afghanistan recently, and our reporter was telling us that he refused to meet President Karzai in a sign that the relationship was strained. And, you know, President Karzai himself, and I'm quoting him, he said that U.S.-led forces were withholding fuel and other material support from their Afghan counterparts in an effort to pressure him to sign this agreement. So how do you think the United States is handling this issue? Do you believe that the U.S. is actually pressuring now President Karzai through whatever means it can to get him to sign this deal, and it will get him to sign this deal?
Well, I think, you know, pressuring with Afghans historically didn't work much, and it didn't work also in the case of President Karzai. As Mr. Webster also mentioned earlier, that, you know, what made him more tense or aggressive towards the U.S. is such pressures. But I think cooperation, regional and international cooperation, is needed, because this problem cannot be just solved with pressures and with leverage and other, even though the U.S. might have a lot of leverage compared to the Afghan situation right now. But a lack of regional diplomatic efforts are also complicating issues, because one of the desperation of the Afghan regime and Karzai for signing that pact and willing to sign those pact finally, if it works out between the U.S. and Afghanistan, is the lack of regional cooperation and the legacy of last 35 years, where we first became a subject of struggle between two superpowers, and later on, to this day, to a greater extent, we are a subject of struggle between all regional countries, yeah. And lack of cooperation and coordination among them, which is further complicating the Afghan situation. Hmm. So there is this big war, and there are small wars within this big war, and there are local dynamics and regional issues that should be also addressed.
Well, Mr. Tarpley, we're hearing General Martin Dempsey say that there is no zero option now for the U.S. in Afghanistan, and that it is going to keep forces in the country. Do you think that this means that the Americans are sure that they're going to get this agreement signed, or that they've already made up their mind that they're going to stay in Afghanistan?
Well, there's certainly a good deal of bluff and bluster. I would say politically, from a domestic U.S. point of view, if these troops are not welcome, they will not be kept there. Any politician proposing to prolong the Afghanistan war at this point is simply courting his own defeat. Any such politician will be swept away, be it Obama or Susan Rice or somebody in the Congress. But let me propose the following. Maybe we need to broaden the focus of this entire thing. The main question in Afghanistan is not 12,000 U.S. troops, yes or no, or somebody else's troops. It's economic reconstruction and development after these three decades of war. This is a country that has been literally decimated by horrendous military activities. And it seems to me that the realistic proposal would be what Afghanistan really needs is about $50 billion U.S. dollars of emergency reconstruction, say in the next 5 to 6 years. There are all kinds of very profitable projects that could be done. Yeah. A pipeline from Turkmenistan to India, a pipeline from Iran to India, going through Afghanistan. At that rate, you could then afford rural electrification, right? Bringing electricity and all the blessings of appliances to rural Afghanistan. And then some approach to these valleys, right? We've had the Tennessee Valley Authority in the United States. The one positive page of recent Afghan history is this Helmand Valley project with hydroelectric plants and flood control and other things. Afghanistan is a country of mountains and valleys, and all of those valleys could be given this treatment of flood control with dams, hydroelectric plants, and therefore, raise the standard of living of the population, wipe out the opium poppy cultivation by giving people not some other crop, but giving them
Ms.
passport into the modern world of industrialization and technology. Yeah.
That brings us to the question of what has stopped this development from going forward. But before we go on, I'd like to give our viewers a chance to take a look now at some of the comments that have been posted on our Facebook page. We'll take a look at those comments now, and we'll be back.
Any American presence in Afghanistan and the Middle East is a poison. The U.S. troops are violating Afghanistan's self-determination and sovereignty by continuing to occupy Afghanistan. I don't buy this. It's the Americans who instated Karzai. If they want him out, they can do it and put someone who will sign it.
Three of the comments among the others that have been posted on our Facebook page. I'll go quickly to our guest, Mr. Arsala, in San Francisco. Now, Mr. Arsala, those comments belied a lack of trust for America. And a lot of people are suggesting that the problem now for the Afghan people is that they can't trust the Taliban, they don't have enough trust in the government, and they can't trust the Americans. Do you agree with that?
Well, there is no doubt that there are different parties to this conflict, and people have resentments and from different sides, and they have been paying the price due to this conflict. But I think As I said earlier, one issue is the intervention of U.S. and military presence of U.S. and NATO there. And the other issue, side by side, is the issue of the role of our neighbors. So it's not just one war. There are many wars in that region going on, and there are resentments towards different sides of this conflict. And I, of course, there will be supporters of this conflict from different sides. Some will agree with one side or the other, but problem is that it's very complex. We cannot ignore the regional dimension of it. And as Mr. Webster also mentioned and brought those excellent points, is that coordination and cooperation from region as well, because we need reorientation of political strategies of our neighbors as well, instead of negative competition between India and Pakistan, Iran and Saudi Arabia, United States and Iran, or others, or Russia or United States, China, United States. They can play a major role instead of those negative intermingling and intervention. This region have a lot of potential, which the whole region can profit. As one of the examples, as Mr. Webster put, was the pipelines and others. It can create a lot of jobs. It can bring a lot of harmony to this region if all the sides to this conflict, all the parties to this conflict, regional countries and the United States plus NATO, if they fairly, for the sake of Afghans and for the sake of peace and stability in the region and the rest of the world, if they cooperate and coordinate instead of creating obstacles and making excuses.
Well, that brings me to this very next important question, which I'll put to Mr. Tarpley. Can an independent Afghanistan without the presence of foreign forces play this role that it can play potentially, you know, as a regional power, as a country in the region with a positive role in different fields? A lot of people have now been saying, Mr. Tarpley, that the president's stance on this deal is reckless and that he's making Afghanistan lose global support, while others are saying that the fact that these troops are present in Afghanistan is causing the problem. Which side are you on?
Well, I think when Karzai came in, he was installed, of course, by the United States. But over time, he has taken on some of the aspects of a national leader, and he expresses tendencies in Afghanistan that are real. Certainly, Afghanistan can be a successful independent country, but the world, which has been bombing and strafing Afghanistan for all these decades, really owes something back. I would point, for example, to the BRICS Bank. People know about the Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa combination. They're building a bank which would be an alternative to the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. This is a made-to-order place for them to start. So important to Russia, so important to China and to India. Let all of these countries begin to put in that $50 billion that would be needed. If you have economic development, then military arrangements can be finessed. They can be done in a number of ways. I just would point to another thing. The reason that Afghanistan is fought over is because it's such an important hub. For example, if you're going to build a fast rail link from India to Europe, an Indo-European railroad, which the world has been waiting for quite a while, that almost has to go through the Khyber Pass. Mm-hmm. So it could become a kind of regional transportation hub, pipelines and rail links going through, and make progress. And it seems to me that's the only way. So if you're going to have military deals, those should be linked with development investments that have to be heavy duty, robust, quite serious.
Well, Ms. Arsalah, there is this other question. Before we run out of time, if you could quickly give us your view. What do you think is going to happen to President Karzai if he continues to resist this deal and he sticks to his stance? Some of our commentators today on our Facebook page were suggesting that America can easily, you know, do away with him or make this agreement be signed anyway.
No, I don't think so. I mean, the Afghan institutions and the standpoint of President Karzai is very clear, and he is an elected leader. I don't think, you know, that there will be any thing that, you know, would force him. He have the authority according to the Afghan constitution to sign that deal and then later on ratified by the Afghan parliament. But even though the Obama administration also indicated that, okay, we can wait till the next administration or next elected leader.
And Mr. Tarpley, under a minute, if you can tell us, or 30 seconds, do you think that we'll see another Iraq and that Karzai, if he resists, then the United States is going to back out of this deal and withdraw completely from the country?
That's hard to say. I would think that the underlying tendency is that the United States, the American people, as we've seen, are sick of war and would like to wind down these foreign commitments. At the same time, I think a precipitous, abrupt withdrawal might create problems. I think at that point, you've got to listen to the Jirga, you've got to listen to Karzai, and at least take that seriously into account, because this is a country to whom a certain regard is owed because of their trials and tribulations. Mm-hmm. But again, without economic development, nothing works.
Historian, journalist, and lecturer Mr. Webster Griffin Tarpley with us there live from Washington. Thank you very much. I'd like to thank our other guest in San Francisco, former Afghan diplomat Mr. Khushal Arsala, for being with us here on The Debate. Thank you so much, everyone, for staying with us. From me, Homa Lezgi. Until our next debate, it's goodbye.